This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
Coming up, we do have an opportunity to give you a code word to win tickets to a Seahawks game. You can remember that single game tickets are on sale for the Seattle Seahawks via Seahawks.com/tickets. We will give you that code word a little bit later this hour. At this point in the season, almost a third of the way through, it's a little bit late for progress reports, so maybe it's right about the right time. This is about the time you usually send it home. And I'm not sure if there's any doubt about who would be getting the best mid-quarter report grade. That the best progress report would go to Russell Wilson,
oh,
right?
Well, no doubt.
He's been exceptional.
Yes.
He's done pretty much everything you could possibly do.
Does he even need a progress report? I feel like right now, if there was a, I don't know, you know how basically in kindergarten, early on, you have a board and everyone gets stickers for if they've done something well? I mean, I feel like Russell Wilson's got an entire board worth of dinosaur stickers that has taken up the entirety of the board. And now all the children around him are jealous and probably secretly loathe him because of how well he's doing comparatively.
Now, which are the guys that you would want to get it in gear? And as I went through and thought about this yesterday, I was realizing that this actually probably speaks more positively than negatively, because there have been some moments like Tedrick Thompson. He got a note that, hey, he needs to stay focused in. Like, he has a tendency, like right before recess, to let his mind wander a little bit. And maybe he's not paying attention to a guy that's running behind him and thinking he can make it up. Like, Tedrick Thompson needs to stay, pay attention until the final minute of class, like, and not let his mind drift. That would be one of them. But Tedrick kind of redeemed himself too, right?
He did with that interception. Oh, absolutely. I feel like that made up for it. And obviously the miss on the John Ross touchdown week one didn't hurt the Seahawks, because they were able to find a way to win the game. Hurt him in the moment. That Thompson interception was huge, and I think that this is going to give him a lot of confidence going forward. I think that locker room really likes him. They really support him, and the way that you heard it after the game last Thursday in the locker room, everyone was really going out of their way to compliment him, and I'm happy that he had that moment for him. So this is essentially, I guess, after a couple of failed quizzes, he got an A on the test, and now he's feeling very good as we get closer and closer to the end of term.
What other progress reports would you have? You can text him in to 710-710. That's our Coors Light text line. I would say that CJ Procise's parents have gotten a progress report saying that CJ's attendance, which has been an issue in the past, that he's spent an awful lot of time in the nurse's office. Like, he has been remarkably available this time. Like, there hasn't been any point where he's been called off to the nurse's office. And we looked and where's CJ? Oh, he scraped his knees down there getting a Band-Aid. CJ is on track to get a perfect attendance award, which I always thought was the lamest award. Like, isn't that the worst? Like,
to get the
award for you showed up. Like, you did the bare minimum each and every day. You showed up.
Yeah, well, sometimes it's as simple as showing up in a little game that we like to call life. Sometimes that's all it takes. But I wonder if Procise is now at the point where, all right, he's showing up every single day and his parents are becoming the helicopter parents that call in and are saying, why isn't little Timmy getting the lead role in the play? Why?
Well, listen, you have to understand, we're just learning whether or not we can count on him. He's still on thin ice as far as that goes.
Listen, he's more than a pine tree in the play.
You guys, I can't let you do this without the schoolhouse rock music that I cut for you.
Thank you very much, Maura.
You're welcome.
Dear Mr. and Mrs. Upati, your son Mike sure is a powerful young man, and we just love having him in front of Russell Wilson. He's his big playground buddy. Nobody would dare pick on little Russell when Big Mike is there. He's got an incredibly strong protective impulse. But Mike's having trouble keeping his hands to himself. He tends to grab onto other kids. Just last week, he was seen holding onto people three different times. We blew the whistle. We called him out by number. We've been looking around for oven mitts that we're going to tape on Mike's hands in hopes this will prevent him from holding that we've been seeing. But we would love to see some encouragement at home. Sincerely, your Seattle Seahawks.
I'm sure that the Catholic school approach has not been implemented with Mike Iupati. It would probably go the same way that it once went with my godfather, who back in the 1960s in a Philadelphia Catholic school was hit with a ruler, proceeded to take the ruler, break it in half, and throw it out the window. He was in trouble.
Are you serious?
Oh, yes, yes.
Oh, that's awesome. How did that go?
Greg Borland was in a lot of trouble with his father and with the Catholic school, and they were very, very happy when he eventually graduated.
Oh, that's really funny. I was in fifth grade. I went to Sacred Heart in Klamath Falls. It's a small Catholic school there from kindergarten through eighth grade. And at that point, the high school had shut down. But I think I was in fifth grade when this debate happened. But I debated the priest, Father Hayes.
Oh, that's going to go well.
In religion class over whether Christmas or Easter was the more important Catholic holiday. And he was telling me Easter, and I told him that logically that didn't make sense. Because if Jesus was never born, Jesus could have never died. It's like, it's not possible. Like, you can't, Christmas has to be the most important one.
Chicken and the egg conversation.
Yeah, I debated chicken and the egg with a Catholic priest, and he was like, he stated it definitively, like, no, and I was like, that just doesn't make sense to me. I've always wondered what was going through his mind, where he's like, this little O'Neill's got a point there, or was he like, this kid is going to be a terrible Catholic if he just doesn't accept what he's told.
He should have done what they did back in, like, the 50s and just started speaking to you in Latin. And that would have really made you feel small. You're like, oh. Well, I guess I can't question you on that. Parvi Estus Magnum.
From the 425, how about special teams coach Brian Schneider's report? Mm. Now, that would be the instructor, like the self-coaching. But, yeah, if I'm the principal of the school, I was like, Brian, we've long known that you are one of the more promising teachers on this staff. But your lesson plan, specifically in the game against the New Orleans Saints, left a lot to be desired. You've got the exchange student who's punting balls, Michael Dixon. He's adapted fantastically. We haven't seen him do anything rash or impulsive like he did a year ago. And it appears that the kicker is in significantly better shape. He's no longer out sneaking cigarettes behind the gym like last year's kicker was. That was there. But Brian, we want a more sound lesson plan to be put together for these special teams. It is incredibly serious.
Yeah, the tackling definitely has to be better on that front. Jason Myers is definitely someone that maybe the other kids don't trust, and they look at him and they're a little bit nervous. He has a tendency to at least make them fear for their safety. And yeah, with Michael Dixon, I'll say this about Dixon. I mean, I think the world of him. I thought the world of him coming out of Texas as a punter. And I will say that I think he's had some issues being as good as I think he was envisioned to possibly be as a punter this season. So, yeah, the special team side of things, I definitely think it needs a little bit of work.
From the 509, Ifedi gets an F. He has regressed to the point he needs to be benched. He looks lost on blocking at many points. Please give us your take. I think he's better than he was a year ago. I don't think he's good enough that you're looking to extend his contract or bring him back necessarily. But I don't think he's been, you don't have a better alternative than him right now. He's not worse than George Fant. He's not worse than George Fant.
And on top of that, you know, for a game against the Browns Sunday, I'm actually okay. I've said this before with an offensive lineman that just holds nonstop. This is something you got to keep in mind about Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett will hit guys, and he will get called for unnecessary roughnesses or personal fouls. And I don't know if that's just part of his game and him trying to maybe knock a quarterback out or get in the quarterback's head. But he clearly wants to intimidate the quarterback, sometimes to the adverse effect of the Cleveland Browns. I'm cool with a Ifedi or Iupati hold, a hold fest, especially if he breaks through, because I don't want to see Russell Wilson getting hit.
How do you evaluate Seattle's secondary? Because I think that's probably, that is my biggest question mark about their defense. I would say that the progress report on the pass rush has been, hey, we're getting things together. It seems like a very attentive class. We believe they're going to pick things up. The secondary is the spot where I'm really wondering, like, okay, we've got to see some stuff. Otherwise, we're going to start playing different guys.
They're not taking the honors class right now.
No.
I think you can clearly tell they are taking possibly the remedial classes because they're really only being asked to do one thing. Don't let anyone get past you. And to their credit, they have done a good job with that. And I don't know if that necessarily means, okay, we can bump them up to an honors or an AP class or something like that. I think right now they are doing exactly what they are being told to do. And I think that Shaquille Griffin has really made some strides as far as being able to make plays on the football. You need to have some guys in the secondary that can do that. But I also think, you know, clearly they're being held back and not ask to do a whole lot because the Seahawks are totally comfortable against a team like the Rams who have three awesome wide receivers just playing their base personnel and just leaving those linebackers out there.
Nobody is showing they need to be promoted.
Right.
Right? This is it's your average regular. Nobody's taking pre-algebra in ninth grade. Nobody's moving ahead to geometry. Everybody's in their standard, and nobody's testing out at this point.
I got a bone to pick with the school systems of the United States of America. So, went to middle school in Massachusetts. Went to a fancy hoity-toity sounding school, Thayer Academy. And after Thayer Academy, I went to Shorecrest Preparatory School, but it's in Florida. And I had to take classes that I'd already taken in Florida. I had to take them again because this school in Florida, again, Florida, we're talking about Florida. They thought that I had not taken the caliber of math that I needed to at that point. So my freshman and sophomore year took two classes I'd already taken in seventh and in sixth grade. It was the worst. It was the absolute
worst. So you had to retake them because they didn't trust the education system of the carpet-bagging Yankees?
Yes, exactly. That's very mean that you said it like that. But
listen, that's how they viewed you, right? Or is Florida not that deep south?
Honestly, no. Florida's weird. Florida is Florida. I always consider Florida separate because there's a lot of transplants there, and I always thought that was weird. I suppose that the Seahawks secondary, is a little bit like I was in that spot because I feel like with me, they didn't trust me to take all these classes that I'd already taken for whatever reason. Maybe the Seahawks secondary deserves a little bit of wiggle room here. Maybe.
Nah, they got to start showing something now. They've been given the opportunities. You got to start playing, otherwise you're going to play different guys. If those safeties don't start playing better, put Marquise Blair
but
in.
But were they given opportunities last week? Were they given opportunities on Thursday? I mean, they had their linebackers out for the majority of the game, almost to their detriment at times. I mean, I get that having Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright out there, that is, and Kendricks as well, that is making your best players be on the field a lot more. But at the same time, sometimes you got to match personnel, and maybe if you had some quicker, faster guys out there, maybe you can limit some of the ways that the Seahawks were carved up over the middle of the field by Gerald Everett and by Cooper Kupp. Maybe things would have been a little bit differently had they done that, or maybe it would have been worse. I would like to see a little bit more. Maybe this isn't the week to do it because you're going up against Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry, but at some point, they're going to have to ask their secondary to do a little bit more because if they continue to throw the linebackers out there against guys that are just faster than them, no matter how good those linebackers are, they're going to be taken advantage of by the good quarterbacks of the game.
The other note that is going home, it's going to each and every rookie. Each and every rookie, a member of a draft class that I know the Seahawks were very high on, and an explanation that there's a lot of room to contribute here, goes home to Marquise Blair. It certainly goes to LJ Collier. It certainly, Ugo Amadi has shown some potential, I think, and I think has shown an ability, especially when he gets in spots where he's near the action or has his hands on the ball, that he's able to make plays. But they've got a lot, and that's going to include Phil Haynes and DeMarcus Christmas, who are going to be activated off the PUP list here in the next month or so, that there's some opportunities they are going to need. If the Seahawks are going to go from being a good team this season to being a great team, you're going to need – that rookie class is going to need to improve. They're going to need to have better November, December than they had September and October.
It definitely is. And look, I think that's something that can happen over the course of a season. But are you going to ask those rookies to do difficult things for you in December when things are crunch time, especially if you haven't seen anything of them to necessarily trust them? You know what I'm really curious about? And, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about guys that maybe move up in class. What do you do about Quentin Jefferson when Jerron Reed comes back? With the way that he has been playing. Because Jefferson's been awesome. He's been awesome this season. He really has. He's the guy that I'm thinking of. Not only am I going to move him from a regular class to honors, I mean, I might move him into AP. I think he's been great. His hands have been active. He's been deflecting the ball. He's been making a really serious push up the middle of the field. And I wonder what happens when they have yet another defensive lineman back, a guy who's awesome in Jerron Reed. Like, what do they do in that situation?
The benefit is going to be Jefferson becomes a huge part of your nickel pass rush and probably stays in the starting lineup. And then you add Jerron Reed to Quentin Jefferson, and you've got Jadeveon Clowney and Ziggy Ansah.
So good on paper.
It does look good. We'll see it from the 253 Dear Parents, young Mr. Collier, and Little Soggy, which
Little Soggy.
I'm assuming is Ziggy. Instead, Little Soggy have not been showing up to class. Once Soggy showed up to complete his assignment after class was over. It would be nice if we could work together to make sure they are in class together in the future. Also, this 360 points out that Will Disley deserves a promotion.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
exactly right. Will yeah. Disley's been absolutely fantastic.
I mean, has Disley graduated? Like, is he even allowed to go to school anymore?
Disley is certainly the guy. If he's the student that is shaving in the sixth grade. As a senior in high school, he's the guy that's got sort of the backpedaling hairline, similar to the guy from Harbor High School that we chanted middle-aged man every time he touched the ball in a basketball game between Aptos and Harbor.
I always felt bad for the kids that developed hair early because the mustache hair, it never looks good. And if you haven't been taught by Papa to shave, it never looks good because it's never thick enough at that point. I'm not sure.
Wait, you felt bad for the kids that had facial hair
yeah,
early?
I did. Oh, yeah, I did.
Oh, God.
Because they didn't know
Are you serious?
It was bad. They didn't. Well, yeah.
Speaking as someone who still didn't have hair underneath his arms at the end of his freshman year in high school, to my immortal and everlasting shame. Oh, it's brutal.
I was.
Give me the early facial hair way above that.
Well, I was in that department with the armpit hair for a while, but I got the facial hair pretty early, but I shaved. Like, I have been shaving until I got this beard, I shaved every single day from when I was, like, basically 12 through for a very long period of time. I will say, you know, on that front, I'm curious. I'm very curious as to how people your age in school acted when they got hair on their arms and on their legs. Did people did they shave their arms and their legs? Because I didn't do this, but I found out through a couple of my coworkers at the last station I worked at that in high school, like, guys who had hairy forearms and hairy legs, like, actually shaved them.
No way.
And they weren't on the swimming team or anything like
yeah,
that, where
see,
it's actually normal to do it. They were just doing it because of a fashion thing. And this was people my age. Apparently people did this. I never did it. I always thought it was kind of manly that I had some forearm hair, especially when I was like a little tiny little kid. Leg hair and arm hair. So that didn't happen back in the day.
That is something, because I'm
weird.
44. And I feel like anybody that's kind of within about 5 to 6 years for me, like, we are completely separated from the manscaping group. Like, guys that I know, even as adults, like, there was no general elimination of body hair. Like, for the most part, like, you went with what you got, maybe some minor tending to, but not any sort of actual, like, you certainly weren't buying razor attachments to deal with body hair. That's something that you kids do.
I've been lucky on the hair in awkward places front, because even though I have, like, really hairy forearms and legs, the chest, it's pretty much the only spot where I have hair, so I look super manly, and I don't have to touch it anywhere else. But there's one weird thing. So, and this is a little awkward to admit. For whatever reason, around the old Nipperooskies, the hair grows in like it's a lion's mane. Like, it's just an outrageous amount of hair there. I don't know why it's like that. But
did you just let it go, or do you tend to it?
No, I tend to it. I tend to it. So basically, I tend to it in a way, and I know this is going to sound so lame, but basically, when I tend to it, my chest hair sort of looks like a natural heart, which again, it's only if I touch up the old Nipperooskies a little bit.
I think it probably.
I'm getting to know a lot about you in our first time working together, Paul.
You're welcome.
It's time
Maura.
For us to go around the NFL here on Danny and Gallant.
It's time to go around the NFL. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
All right, we'll follow that up with, sorry.
Exactly. We're not going to mention that even happened. We're going to pretend that did not exist.
I don't know if this is any less awkward. Keenan Allen reiterated his Chris Harris can't hold my jockstrap comment that he made in an Instagram comment following Sunday's game when he spoke to reporters yesterday.
Is it true?
Yeah.
Go watch the film, bro. This is not a secret. Like, I said, Chris Harris can't hold my jockstrap. He said, is that true?
Watch the tape, man.
No one on the Chargers should be talking any trash, Danny. This is a team that is beyond talented and is 2-3 right now, and they just lost to Joe Flacco. At home, no less. I feel like Keenan Allen in this spot, you lost, dude. Like, take the L. It doesn't matter if you were beating Chris Harris over the course of the game. Your offense scored 13 points. Clearly, you didn't do very well.
I kind of like the fact, because he's going to see him again. I kind of like the fact that he kind of he stands by it and he'll up the stakes. I like it when two guys legitimately don't like each other and don't hide that fact.
I do too, but I will say this. I mean, game recognizes game, and Chris Harris is a very good cornerback, and I think it's pretty disrespectful for Keenan Allen to say things along those lines, especially after a loss.
That's why I like it.
I
doesn't matter if it reflects reality or not. Hating on a guy that's good is great.
I don't like it. I don't like it, especially when you lose. Take the L. If they had won, yes, fine. But they lost.
I kind of respect the fact that he'll talk trash after he lost and say, yeah, I still was better than him.
Classic diva receiver.
It's the debut so many people were waiting for. Rob Gronkowski made his Fox debut last night and gave us this gem.
Well, let me tell you something about Julian. First off, he calls himself the squirrel. You want to know why he calls himself the squirrel? Because he is a squirrel. He's furry. He's furry. He's cute. He's elusive. He's feisty. And most importantly, whenever he gets a chance, he gets that nut. Just like he gets a first down. Just like he gets the touchdown. Just like he'll give you a catch when you need it.
All right. Everybody loves Gronk, right?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
That's bad.
That's bad?
Yes. I've been waiting because when I first heard it last night, I was like, okay, it could be amusing. I don't want to hear that if that's what he's going to do. Like, he's going to come on and be a pro wrestler, like a bad pro wrestler. That's what we're going to hear from Rob Gronkowski. And make weird potential, like, strange sex illusions. Like, that's probably what it is, right?
Oh,
like,
no doubt. He was so annoying. Excited to say that.
Yeah, come on.
But
like, that's, I don't want to hear that.
I think that putting him in a spot where he's talking about his old team is lending itself to maybe that wrestler persona. I feel like maybe if we're looking at a game between two teams that he has never played for, so any game that doesn't involve the Patriots, and any game that doesn't involve a team that he might have been a rival of, I feel like that might be a better way to judge him. I think this game, he was just hyped up in the moment. I mean, he's in Foxborough as well. It's not like he was in front of a crowd. I'm sure that he wanted to really highlight all the things that he used to be able to do in front of that crowd on the field.
Here's the problem, Paul, is that athletes who are funny, like, that's a very low bar. It was kind of like Scalia when he was in the Supreme Court, and like everybody's like, Scalia's really funny. No, Scalia's not funny. He's funny for a Supreme Court justice. Like, that bar is
pretty low
so
standard.
It's so exceptionally low that if you take that person and put them in, is Rob Gronkowski funny for a TV broadcaster? I don't know, but the initial returns would indicate no, he's not. And when you put someone in that spot where you're like, okay, this guy's supposed to be amusing, that wasn't amusing to me. I thought that was annoying.
Give him time. He'll grow on you.
Like a fungus.
Pat Shurmur chose to punt with the Giants down 14 in the fourth quarter last night, but then later challenged a pass interference no call with 3 minutes left in the game. This is what Shurmur had to say for himself.
Fourth and two, down 14. Why punt in that situation?
Felt like it was the right thing to do.
You quit, coward, and you lost all right to challenge anything later. Once you surrender like that, you can no longer delay the end of the game by challenging something, even if it's egregiously wrong.
I got in trouble once at a previous job for getting mad at someone who had punted with 4.5 minutes left in a game that was only a 2-score game for what I had said. So I agree with you on that front, Danny. However, you have to challenge that because it was a blatant pass interference. And the fact that the NFL is totally unwilling to overturn clear missed calls on the field is so bad. They should look at the film and overturn it. And for whatever reason, they are just not. They're refusing to, in fact, overturn clear pass interference penalties. And to me, this is a lot like what we're seeing out of baseball's umpires, who I think, for the most part, are absolutely useless. These guys at baseball games, you won't even see a replay in question on the Jumbotrons at pretty much any stadium because they don't want to show the umpires up. And the umpires don't want to show themselves up. Well, now you've got referees missing calls with a rule change, and they don't want to show themselves up either. And I think that's shameful. Everyone that's watching the game could see that was a pass interference call. And I understand your line of thinking. I mean, the game was essentially over.
Once you quit, you can't delay it.
But someone has to fight the fight to get pass interferences actually called.
It's true. It was a clear pass interference. Head to 710sports.com/win and enter the code word TACKLE That's tackle by the end of our show to be entered to win two tickets to see the Seahawks host the Ravens. That's October 20th. Remember, this code word will expire when our show ends. Details and rules at 710sports.com/win. Coming up next, a lot of teams are trying to find the next Russell Wilson. That might be a fool's errand. We'll explain why.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
There's only one Russell Wilson. And I think that's going to be true even as teams spend higher and higher draft picks looking for the next Russell Wilson. And I expect the difference in Sunday's game to be Russell Wilson and his ability to make plays while avoiding mistakes, and we'll see how Baker Mayfield's able to do that. But that's completely what I expect to see this Sunday, is that Baker Mayfield is unable to avoid the turnovers that Russell Wilson, the fact that he hasn't been picked off, I mean, that is a huge accomplishment this season, Paul.
I hope that he does to Myles Garrett what Matadors often do to Bulls, though I'm typically rooting for the Bulls in those situations.
You root for the Bull?
I feel bad for the Bull. I mean, the Bull's going to die in those situations. So
I've never seen an actual bullfight, and I don't think I have any real desire to.
I have no desire to either. Every now and then a video goes viral of the Bull just jumping into the stands, and I'm like, well, good for you, Bull. Yeah, you're going out swinging, as opposed to going out just basically slowly getting stabbed to death, which is not fun. It's going to be a tough one for Russell Wilson. Myles Garrett is the kind of guy who is going to create an impact on this game. I understand that Aaron Donald didn't last week, but I think that Garrett, just given that he typically is going to be lined up on an edge, they can be a little more creative with him than maybe the Rams could be with an Aaron Donald type. And that means that he could be coming from the right, he could be coming from the left. And, you know, with Dwayne Brown dealing with a biceps injury, he's not 100%. He's not the guy that he was, I would say, a couple of seasons ago. And on top of that, I mean, with, you know, Jermaine Ifedi, this is a real big challenge for him as well. And Mike Iupati on the interior, too. This is, I think, the interesting matchup to watch, is what can Myles Garrett do to stop the possible MVP, Russell Wilson, who has been amazing thus far.
Steve Young talked about what he's seen from Russell Wilson so far. And actually, Steve Young's a pretty good comparison point, because I think there are some traits that Russell shares with Steve Young. But here's Steve Young on Seattle's number three.
Yes. Here's the thing. You tell me, JoJo, what are you seeing, Rob, Victor? I mean, as far as the eyeball test, there's nothing he can't do excellently. I don't know other. Like, we talk about Drew Brees with Tom Brady and how they dominate or ahead of the game. He never seems behind of any issue anywhere. And so that is my definition is not only MVP, one of the best that ever played. You guys tell me.
Is he wrong? I mean,
he's not wrong.
He's definitely one of the most unique quarterbacks that we've ever seen play. And, you know, we talked about it earlier with Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield, smaller quarterbacks that need to move around, sometimes escape the pocket to see down the field. Like, that's never really been an issue for Russell Wilson, but he has that ability. He does figure eights in the backfield. He can scramble. He doesn't make mistakes. There's a lot of things that he has in his arsenal that you just don't see anywhere else. And the league is maybe a little more friendly to smaller quarterbacks. I was listening to Golic and Wingo before our show began, and they had Doug Flutie on, and Doug Flutie was talking about whether or not in today's NFL if he would actually be given a chance to succeed. I actually think he would. I thought Flutie, when he came back to the league, was really good with the Buffalo Bills. I would be curious to see if more quarterbacks can do it, but for the most part, Russell Wilson is a tiny little unicorn, so I suppose he's like little Sebastian from Parks and Recreation. The famed little tiny diminutive horse of the town of Pawnee, Indiana.
R.I.P.
The mistake that NFL teams are making in the copycat league is to think that, oh, there have been so many Russell Wilsons that have gone undiscovered or untapped because we've been unwilling to play them. There are so many guys that have fit and that we just said we're too short to play, so we haven't given them a shot. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. And I now think that the undersized quarterback might be overvalued in the NFL.
The fact that
Kyler Murray was the number one overall pick the year after Baker Mayfield was the number one overall pick. And I'm convinced that if either of those guys had come out in 2011 or 2010, they probably wouldn't have been chosen. I don't think they would have been chosen in the first two rounds, and maybe not until the back half of the draft. I think that's a mistake teams are making.
That's a fair point. I also, though, think that there might be a changing in the way that teams look at quarterback prospects and they might be just saying, well, who was the best in college football? Because that's what Kyler Murray was. That's what Baker Mayfield was. That's what Deshaun Watson was. And Watson was drafted third in a quarterback class behind a quarterback in Mitchell Trubisky that, honestly, I don't know what he brings to the table other than all of the things that scouts drool over that they shouldn't be drooling over. And I think there's definitely too much value that's placed on, I think, size for quarterbacks. I mean, how many quarterbacks have we seen that are like 6'7" and have the build and all that that just have stunk? I'll specifically look at Brock Osweiler with the Houston Texans, who made me want to stop watching football.
He was too tall, though, right? And everybody even said that, like, he might be too tall, and Dan McGuire was the guy that he was compared to because of the size. Like, he might have been too tall.
He was like a giraffe. And when he ran, he looked like a giraffe as well.
I do think that teams way too often decide to trust what the guy profiles as opposed to how he played. They try to, like, look and say, oh, what can I do with these raw physical tools rather than say, like, what did he actually do? Mitchell Trubisky, what, started for 1 year? Like, it was essentially a one-year starter. Ryan Tannehill had moved from wide receiver to quarterback at Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. There's certainly examples of guys who've had. Marcus Mariota had a tremendous amount of success. I don't know how you avoid busts at quarterback. I do know that the more you talk yourself into somebody and point to somebody who is a precedent, you're better off getting one of one than trying to get someone you talk yourself into as well. If Russell Wilson was successful, so Baker Mayfield can be too.
I'd much rather go the route of, I saw this guy succeed and I'm going to give it a whirl, as opposed to, wow, this guy is big. This guy is tall. This guy has a strong arm and all the physique that I want. I'm going to see if I can fix him, because you got to have a good coach to fix a guy. And even if you do have a good coach, sometimes you can't change a athlete, just like you can't change a human being.
Do you think Baker Mayfield ends up starting a playoff game for the Browns?
Yes.
If they get to the playoffs and he's the starting quarterback that leads them to the playoffs.
I think he will, but I don't think it's until they move on from Freddie Kitchens. I think Freddie Kitchens is a serious detriment in the development of Baker Mayfield. I think that he enables Baker Mayfield's bad habits, and I think that he was a hire that was made because the Browns were scared of pressing the reset button entirely. But they also, at the same time, while pressing somewhat of a reset button, moving on from Hugh Jackson, they wanted somebody that there was a degree of familiarity that Mayfield had. I think it would have been fine to move Freddie Kitchens into an offensive coordinator role and then bring in a new head coach. But there is also the whole idea in the NFL where coaches essentially have their guys and they refuse to work with guys who aren't their guys because there's like a lack of trust or whatever.
I think that Baker Mayfield listens to too much of what is said and is too conscious of the dialogue that's going on around about him. And I think that when you're that way, you have to truly not care what other people are saying about you. You have to truly, if you're that fixated on it, it can't bother you. And I do think it bothers him.
Can't
I think
that be
it
fixed?
Bothers him.
Can't that be fixed?
I don't know, man. Have you ever known a guy to stop having rabbit ears?
No.
Like Milton Bradley was here, and I remember the first time that I knew, and it was like his third or fourth team, the first time I knew that it was not going to work was when he had earplugs in. And I was like, oh, man. Like, he actually is having to physically drown out what people are saying to him. He can't stop it. I've never known anybody who's had rabbit ears who's been able to lose the rabbit ears. Some guys have been successful. Aaron Rodgers has rabbit ears, and he's successful. Russell Wilson clearly does not have rabbit ears, or if he does have rabbit ears, he's so disciplined in how he talks about it that he truly does not ever concede that he's heard anything anybody says about him.
Yeah, I think those are very fair points, and I wonder if there is a way to shake that. I think if you go up to somebody and just blatantly tell them, what are you doing here?
Odell Beckham Jr.?
Yeah.
If that's helped him?
Well, here's the thing. I really do wonder the way in which people have gone up to him and suggested that he changed. Because Odell Beckham Jr. is one of those guys where I feel like there's a little bit of trepidation when you come up to someone and say, hey, dude, you're acting like a loony pants on the sideline. And I think the same thing would be the case with Baker Mayfield. Like, hey, man, I understand that you use this as motivation, but isn't there a way as well where you can use some of this as motivation and you can also just move on to the next week too? Because I really think that there was a part of him this week that dedicated his attention to basically trying to come up with a witty response to Richard Sherman. I don't know how long that took. Honestly, given the way that he talks, it could have been something that took like 5 seconds for him to come back up. Because it was a funny, self-deprecating response that he had to Richard Sherman, where he said essentially, hey, but it's like the first time on video that it has been used to help me out. referring to the time where he got arrested at the University of Oklahoma and tackled by a police officer. I think that you can do something about that and actually get him to just focus on the most important matter at hand. And the most important matter at hand is like the next game, not the last game. And someone's just got to tell him. I feel like he'd listen. I feel like Odell Beckham Jr. maybe wouldn't listen.
If Danny and Gallant, it's time for us to take stock of everything that's happened. We throw flags next.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
It is that time where we take stock of everything that's occurred over the previous 3 hours. Challenge, penalize, and thoroughly digest everything that's gone on. Also, remember, you can head to 710sports.com/win where you enter the code word TACKLE. T-A-C-K-L-E at 710sports.com/win. You'll be entered for your chance to get two tickets to see the Seahawks take on the Ravens. That's on October 20th. Details and rules at 710sports.com/win. Maura, your debut voyage here with Danny and Gallant. We're gonna give you the first opportunity to throw a flag.
All right. I was going to throw a flag at you, Paul, for a little TMI with the body hair discussion, but I'm going to give it to the 206 because after your discussion, they texted in, screenshot those nipples, Gallant.
Listen.
They wanted a screenshot of Paul's heart.
I am, listen.
Paul, did you get a 206 number? Is that what happened?
I have not done that yet.
You flooding the text line.
Listen, I don't think people want me to flaunt what I've got. I don't think you want that. I don't think that you want that in your life.
I will say the overwhelming text messages were that they don't.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Listen, I'm blatantly honest, sometimes to my own detriment, and yeah, we got a forest going on there.
All right, fair enough. So the flag thrown on the 206 for the request of more MI. I guess it was they wanted more.
They want a striptease, essentially.
yeah, apparently that. Lydia, we'll move on to you. Where's your flag going?
Danny, I might have to throw one at you since you said I can't throw one at myself. I mean, honestly, the self-deprecator in me wants to throw like an unnecessary roughness one on myself or a personal foul because I'm not wearing a Blue Friday shirt today and you called me on it this morning on the Blitz.
That's true.
And it was because my loyalty's divided today. The Cardinals are facing off today against the Nationals. It is Blue Friday as well, so I just went neutral. I went Switzerland. And myself, being a huge throwback fan, and you know this about me, I don't think I own anything modern, per se, in Seattle sports attire. But I'm kind of jealous. Now I'm just very envious that you're rocking the Expos and Paul's got the like old school Seahawks shirt on.
It's got the Seahawks with the Kelly green.
Kind of bitter over here.
Okay. I understand. I will fully accept that flag. Yeah. Paul's got the old school Seahawks with the Kelly green, which
those are my favorite colors. Yeah.
It is. They're the best.
Is there any chance that they'll wear those old school unis? I know that
it's just the helmet thing.
The helmet thing is the worst because
the dumbest.
There are some awesome throwback uniforms across the NFL. The Philadelphia Eagles throwback Kelly greens, the Denver Broncos throwback orange jerseys with the D with the horse going through it on the side of the helmet. I could go on and on.
The Buccaneers and their orange sherbet.
Ooh, yeah, yeah.
Floppy-headed pirate.
And the pirate, yeah, the rascallion pirate.
The French pirate.
Yeah, he's very French. He looks like a musketeer.
Yeah, he's absolutely French. His name's D'Artagnan was there. But yeah, no, because you're only allowed to have one color helmet that throws all of these out.
So Maura and I, obviously very aesthetic related today. How about you guys? What are your flags going to?
My flag goes on Paul. Unnecessary creation of verbiage. I don't think we ever need to say the word nipple. I definitely know we never need to say nipperoo.
I like nipperoo.
Nipperoo.
That's been the
never,
theme for 2 days. Nip in the bud yesterday, and now
nipped in the bud.
We're having trouble with like
the word nip.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're a little nervous.
Steer clear.
Steer clear of the word nip. Okay.
Yeah. So 15 yards assessed for unnecessary creation of weird words.
Okay. My challenge flag then is going to go at you, Danny O'Neill, and I need a little help at first because I'm trying to pick up on accents and certain pronunciations, and I was wondering if I stumbled across one. Could you please say what is a Terminator? A Terminator is a what?
Robot.
Yes. Okay. But robot? What's going on here? Is that PNW pronunciation 101?
No.
Am I learning accents?
That's completely because I find that humorous.
Okay.
I believe that's how Holmgren used to say it, because he would love to say when they would ask, like, do players start looking at it? He goes, they're not robots. They're not robots, and I've stolen that, incorporated it, because I find it amusing.
Well, I find it amusing now as well. I thought that might be like a random part of the Pacific Northwest, an accent that I'm now learning off the top of my head.
No, it's completely, because I love little verbal quirks like that. Like my wife says hover. She's like, why are you hovering over me? Or she'll say like, oh, it's a hovercraft. And I'll just ask her to repeatedly pronounce it. Like, why is it that way? And she'll be like, oh, I don't know. There's other times where I absolutely butcher pronunciations. And usually it's because it's a word that I read, but I'm not around smart enough people who use it.
I've had that. Like
ennui. I said to someone, I was like, oh, I suffers from ennui. And my wife goes, what are you talking about? And I'm like, you know, like E-N-N-U-I. She goes, ennui? Because it's all French and stuff.
There's nothing worse than reading a book and thinking that you're smart because you read the book and you see a word that you want to pronounce, and then all of a sudden you pronounce it on the radio and you get completely shamed for it. This has happened to me numerous, numerous times, so I completely empathize with you on that front.
Acumen? That's another one that I've said before. He's got good business acumen.
Yeah.
It's acumen, right?
Acumen, yes.
Yeah, it's acumen.
Nip in the butt versus nip in the bud, which I'm still...
I just think that's because you're a weird gardener.
My mom, who is a gardener, shamed me for that after I got back. She's like, how do you not know that? I made you weed for years and years. How do you not know what that is? I'm like,
how are we allowed to be forced to weed? Like, that is...
I know.
That's awful. Weeding's the worst.
I hate weeding. And you got to do it with your hands. No, just get rid of the grass and replace it with gravel.
There's no point. When I would be sent out, I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, I'm not getting paid for this.
Yeah.
I'm just going to have to do it again. This is the worst task. I hate it.
I hated weeding.
Oh, it's just the worst. Well, that's going to do it for us. Not just today, but for this week. Do you enjoy today?
Oh, I had a blast. I'm very excited for Seahawks-Browns. I'm hoping all the Hawksplainers are not going to be right in saying that this is a game that will be a lot closer than it needs to be. I hope that it is a blowout and that we see Odell Beckham Jr. having a little temper tantrum, Baker Mayfield doing the same thing. Let's go!
If that happens, I want you to come in and I want you to be like, oh, what's this I hear about? It's always close. They always play down. Don't get too cocky.
I will be so obnoxious. Don't worry.
Yeah, that will be fantastic. And remember, don't let a win get to your head or a loss get to your heart. Listen to that on a Public Enemy track, and then I saw it in somebody's bio yesterday. Thanks to Lydia on the board, Maura, who's our expert producer today. For Paul and I, we're going to talk to you Monday. Danny and Gallant.
Later.